Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Boys Life magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. We're going to begin today, first article from Boys Life, from the Boys Life headliners. And we're going to talk about Lucas Verbikas. He was born January 6th. 1993, his hometown, Orlando Hills, Illinois. His height is 5 feet 11 inches. His weight is 128 pounds. And Lucas made headlines when, as a freshman, he won the 2009 Nike Indoor Nationals High School Track and Field Championship 5,000-meter run and set a national record time of 14 minutes 18 0.42 seconds. He also won the 2 mile race in 8 minutes 57.44 seconds, a national freshman record by 19 seconds. The scoop. He was born in Lithuania. Lucas came to the United States in 2002. His parents are coaches and helped train him. His mother was a national champion distance runner in Lithuania. His other interests? Lucas also won the 2008 USA Youth Elite National Triathlon and a 2009 Pan American Junior Triathlon. The distances were 0.46 mile swim and the 12.4 mile bike and a 3.1 mile run. The future for Lucas. Lucas will continue track, cross country, and triathlon with goals of becoming an Olympic champion. The advice he gives to all of us? If you want to succeed in something, there are three necessary things. First and foremost is hard work. Second, never stop in a game or race, no matter how hard it might seem. And third, an athlete needs a burning desire to accomplish his goals. And this has pictures of Lucas running in his various races. Our next Boys Light headliner is Chaz Dennis. He was born September 19, 1996, in his hometown, Galloway, Ohio. He made headlines as the youngest bowler to roll a perfect 300 game at age 10 and the youngest at 11 to roll an 800 series, a three-game set with scores totaling 800 points or more. The scoop for Chaz? Chaz began bowling at 2 and bowled in his first league at 3. To compensate for the heavy ball, he adopted an unusual two-handed roll. He rolled 279, 236, and 300 games in the 2008 Pepsi United States Bowling Congress Youth Championships Regional Qualifying Tournament. Bowled over. Chaz is a youth member of the United States Bowling Congress, bowls in three leagues, and has won scholarships in several tournaments over the last 2 years. Chaz's other interests. Golf, football, basketball, and video games. The future? Chaz plans to get a good education and be a pro bowler competing around the world. And his advice? You have to practice. The longer you practice, the better you'll be. And then there's Eric Eason. He was born May 5th, 1991. His hometown? Boulder, Colorado. Scout rank? Eagle Scout. Troop 72 in Boulder. He made headlines by being named a recipient of the 2009 Hertz Fellowship valued at $250,000. The scoop? Eric completed high school early through homeschooling supplemented by enrichment programs and university classes. He graduated in 2009 from the University of Colorado with 2 degrees in engineering physics and applied math. His fellowship will be used to pursue a doctorate in applied physics at Stanford University. The future for Eric? I want to be a scientist working in industry. In my ideal career, I would apply my physics background and work with my hands. And then there's Colin Carlson. He was born January 31st, 1996. And his hometown is Coventry, Connecticut. He made headlines by organizing the Cool Coventry Club, a community-based group that combats climate change. Colin has nabbed lots of awards for his environmental achievements, such as the Nestle Very Best in Youth Award, the International Young Eco Hero Award, and the Cartoon Network Eco Adventure Award. The scoop? Through his club, Colin gives out free info about saving energy. He gives school talks, creates earth-friendly projects, and visits with business owners about how to become greener. This whiz kid is already a student at the University of Connecticut, majoring in ecology, evolutionary biology, and environmental studies. The future for Colin? He plans to become an environmental lawyer and conservation biologist. Now, how about Scouts in Action? This is on page 45. The true story of Scouts in Action. He saved a boy caught in a rip current. Brian Lang, 14, was boogie boarding near shore on a family vacation at Venice Beach, California, when he heard a boy screaming for help. It has a picture of Brian on his boogie board and a swimmer out there grabbing for help. Something is pulling me under. Help! Help! Without hesitation, Brian swam toward the boy. The powerful rip current kept pulling the boy down, so Brian dived under the water and brought him to the surface. Brian put the boy on the boogie board and pushed him toward shore. A lifeguard helped Brian bring the boy onto the beach, then checked him for injuries. Thank you for saving this boy's life. If you hadn't been there, he probably would have died. The boy's older brother was nearby and took him home. No one was hurt during the incident. First Class Scout Brian Lang, a member of Troop 118, chartered to Moose Lodge, 1818, Arlington, Texas, received an honor medal for his actions. And it has pictures here of Brian with his medals, and also of Brian and his the person he saved on their way home, and Brian saving him from the waters. More Scouts in Action. He got his sisters out of the smoke-filled house. Garrick Lott, 12, and a friend were watching Garrick's sisters when a smoke detector went off. Garrick quickly led everyone to a neighbor's house. Garrick turned home and smelled smoke, but he couldn't find the fire. He switched off the circuit breakers as a neighbor called 911. Garrick left the house and called his parents. The fire department arrived and put out a fire in the basement. Thanks to Garrick's actions, there were no injuries during the incident. Second Class Scout Garrick Lott, a member of Troop 434, chartered to the Latter-day Saints Church, Temporia, 1st Ward, Orem, Utah, received a heroism award for his actions. And it has pictures of the family running for safety, Garrett finding the cutting off the breaker switches, and then the fireman coming and putting out the fire, and of course Garrick receiving his heroism award. And finally, he saved a man from drowning. Ben Singer, 14, heard Kemp Horn, 63, yelling for help and struggling in the water after his kayak overturned offshore at a resort in Ixtapa, Mexico. Mr. Horn was exhausted. Ben maneuvered his kayak next to Mr. Horn and steadied both boats before pulling Mr. Horn into his kayak. Ben then escorted Mr. Horn safely back to shore. Mr. Horn suffered no injuries during the incident. Life Scout Benjamin Cole Singer, a member of Troop 223, chartered to the Knights of Columbus Council in 1692, St. Anthony of Padua Church, Fresno, California, received a heroism award for his actions. And the picture shows the man drowning, and then Ben helping him up into his kayak, and the men rowing to safety, and of course Ben receiving his heroism award. And now let's go to page 49, where our episode of Bible Stories. Has a picture here. The Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh refuses to let my people go. Wait by the Nile and take your staff in your hand. So Moses confronted Pharaoh there and stretched out his hand over the Nile, and it was changed to blood. There were also plagues of frogs, gnats, and flies, but Pharaoh was unmoved. Then there was a plague upon the livestock of Egypt, disease among the people, and thunder and hail. But Pharaoh's heart was hard, and he would not listen to the Lord. Then the wind brought a plague of locusts that devoured every growing thing in the land, and darkness spread over Egypt for 3 days. Then Pharaoh relented and agreed to let Israel go. So it has a picture of Pharaoh with his staff, and Moses with his staff, and Pharaoh, Moses saying, "The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to tell you to let my people go, but you have not listened. So now the Lord says, by this you will know that I am the Lord." And has a picture of Pharaoh with a scorned face, and he says, "Get out of my sight." And now we have an article from A Past Boy's Life. It's entitled Wild Idea, and this is from an article from September of 1990. The article is entitled, "What a Wild Idea." Can you invent a better telephone, paperclip, computer gadget, car engine? If so, fame and fortune could be yours. But take care. Inventing useful things is not easy. Most inventions go no farther than the dusty files of the United States Patent and Trademark Office. The Patent Office grants patents or ownership for inventions so that other people can't copy them without permission. The first United States patent was granted in 1790. It was for a new way to make potash, an ingredient used to fertilize crops. More memorable were later inventions like Thomas Edison's light bulb and Alexander Graham Bell's telephone. Those inventions changed the world. Other inventions weren't so marvelous. Those go into the wild idea category. Take Alfred Clark's rocking chair butter churn, for example, patented in 1913. First of all, you have to understand something. Inventions often come from people who hate hard work. They try to find ways to do tough jobs while taking it easy. No doubt Mr. Clark loved rocking. He probably liked butter, too. But in those days, you had to make your own butter by churning cream. Mr. Clark didn't like that chore, so he combined churning and rocking into one activity. First, you poured cream into a barrel attached to the chair. Then you sat and rocked. After a while, a long while, the cream became butter. There was nothing wrong with the rocking chair butter churn or with its cousins, the rocking chair fan, 1869, and the rocking chair washing machine bathtub, 1890. Nothing except that doing the rocking was actually harder than doing the work the old-fashioned way. Lucky for everyone, the electric motor was invented and stopped all rocking chair brainstorms forever. Round about that time in 1895, another inventor had a wild idea. James Kelly's invention was a hose and ring indoor shower. It was a simple invention. You just connected the hose to the bathtub faucet and hung the ring around your neck. The ring had holes in it. Turn on the water, and in an instant, Niagara covered your body. Sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it? Unfortunately, the public considered the gadget a watch-out. It disappeared down the drain of time. Another snoozer was the alarm bit. There were several versions. The first one, patented in 1882, belonged to Samuel S. Applegate. Mr. Applegate began with a bed and a clock. Connected to the clock was a lever. At wake-up time, the lever moved a wooden arm that pulled a cord. The cord released a wooden frame with 60 corks attached to it. The frame with corks dropped and hit the sleeper's head. The thing was lightweight so as not to cause head injuries. Another wake-up wonder was the Ludwig Iderer alarm bit of 1900. It worked steam. The steam built up pressure in pipes. The pressure made the bed tilt up, sending the sleeper sliding slowly to the floor. He landed just hard enough to wake without being startled by an alarm. This bold invention was met with a resounding yawn. Now you're out of bed and ready for breakfast. Look, it's a grapefruit. But wait, those things are dangerous. They squirt juice in people's eyes. But not if you use Joseph Fallick's 1928 grapefruit shield. This simple wax paper hood fit onto a grapefruit half held in place by little pins. In position, it looked like a baby carriage without wheels. Brilliant. That would keep juice out of your eye. But say you want to protect your whole body from splatters. For that, try John McGuire's 1883 raincoat with drain. At first, it looks like an ordinary raincoat. But look closer. The rain collects in a cuff at the bottom. Then it drains away from your pants and shoes through a tube that sticks out one side. It worked, but only in a light rain, when you stood perfectly still. Okay, you've kept your feet dry, but now you need to get them warm. The obvious choice is William Tell Steiger's 1877 foot warmer. Fit the strap around your neck. Breathe into the little rubber cup. Your warm breath travels down tubes worn under your clothes. The tubes end in your shoes, where your breath heats your feet. In a crazy way, this one makes sense. But who wants to walk around with a cup at his lip and tubes running down his body? Nobody, that's who. True, you could wear the tubes outside your clothes, but then your breath would cool on the way down. Well, not all inventions are for human use, of course. Some are for chickens. Is your poultry too plump? Your fryer too fat? Then try the hen exerciser invented by William J. Manley in 1906. It combines a food box and a tilted spinning platform. When your hen heads for the food, her weight makes the platform turn. To keep eating, she's got to keep moving. Jogging shoes not included. You can reward your fitfall with her own goggles, though. In 1903, Andrew Jackson, no, not that Andrew Jackson, invented hen sunglasses. Their purpose? To protect the hen's eyes, of course. There's an old saying, build a better mousetrap and the world will be the path to your door. Many have tried. Consider the work of Joseph Barad and Edward E. Markov, patented in 1908. The trap was a lever in the middle with a bit of cheese on it. The hungry rodent pokes its head onto an opening near the lever. He gets the cheese and trips the lever. This pulls two smaller levers attached to an elastic band with bells on it. The band snaps around the rodent's neck. It doesn't hurt the animal, just scares him. He rushes back to the nest. The bells scare the other rats. They rush out of the nest. Now that they're out in the open, you can catch them. How? With your own new improved better mousetrap. The world is waiting. Inventors, get to work. In another article from that same issue, September 1990, Isaac Asimov's Future World, Robots. Robots will do the dull jobs. Science fiction writers have been writing about robots for 70 years, since the world was invented by Czech writer Karel Čapek in 1921. Though the concept was easy, an artificial device that could do the work we usually associate with human beings, the actuality was not. It was not till the middle 1970s when the microchip came into use that it became possible to computerize machines and make them compact and reasonably cheap. Since then, such computerized machines or industrial robots have come into use in factories, especially in the United States and Japan. These industrial robots don't look much like human beings, but because they are computerized, they can do work that is more accurate and more complex than that of ordinary machines. It may be that the robots will never quite look like human beings, or at least not for a long time. But people in the field are doing their best to make robots do ever more complicated things. They would like to have them work in offices and hospitals and homes. It will be a new kind of industrial revolution. In the first industrial revolution, which started a little more than two centuries ago with the steam engine, machines took over much of the muscle work of human beings. Instead of digging, pushing, pulling, and straining, human beings could push buttons and control the machines that did the work. However, that left a great many kinds of work that didn't require muscles, but involved the human brain instead. Such work might not have made much demand on the brain. It might have been repetitive and dull, such as alphabetizing cards or copying letters, but it couldn't be done by anything but human beings. Animals and machines just weren't smart enough or complex enough. Dr. Asimov was born in the Soviet Union in 1920. He moved to the United States with his family at age 3. He read his first science fiction story at age 9 and earned his first college degree at 19. The renowned scientist and author, now 71, has written more than 320 books. The article continues, "It is easy to see that robots could be expected to do jobs that are too dangerous or too dirty for human beings, to fight fires, work underwater, clean out septic tanks, and so on. However, it is even more important that they do the dull jobs. As it is, if people spend their lives working at jobs in which they don't use their brains much, they lose the function of their brains. If you spend all your life lying in a bed and never run or play games, you lose the use of your muscles, and that is so with your brain as well. If robots in the future take over the 3Ds, 3D jobs, dangerous, dirty, and dull, then human beings will have to do the other things that do require brain work. Human beings can be artists, writers, and musicians. They can be executives who run businesses. They can be technicians who design and repair robots. They can be teachers. They can be engineers. They can be scientists. They can explore space. Of course, you might wonder, can all human beings work at these things? Aren't many people just ordinary people who can only do ordinary work? Some, perhaps, but not as many as it might seem. The trouble is that nowadays, people aren't educated for creative work. They are educated just to do the dull work that robots ought to be doing, and after people do that for years, they're not fit for anything else. We've gone through such things in our history. In the years before the Industrial Revolution, most people were illiterate. There was no need for them to read or write, for the work they did could be done without it. By the time they were adults, it was next to impossible for them to learn to read and write, and even if they tried, for learning is easiest when you are young. People thought, therefore, that most people simply couldn't read or write no matter what. After the Industrial Revolution, people began to work in factories instead of on farms. They had to use complicated machinery. They needed to read instructions and write reports, so schools were established and children were made to go to them. It turned out that almost everybody could learn to read and write, so that now we live in a literate society. But education is still designed mostly for teaching reading and writing. Children are taught in large classes, and everyone learns the same thing at the same time. Children are all different, however. Each has his own special interests. That is why children sometimes find schools dull, because they are not learning what they want to learn. Suppose, though, that we have teaching robots. Suppose we have devices at home that can give us any book from a vast library, or any kind of instructions, or artwork, or pieces of music. Suppose each person can ask questions about what he is interested in, and have those questions answered, and be given materials to read or to listen to on that subject. That would be all right in addition to basic learning in schools, where students could spend time working with other children and with adults. We can visualize a world in which all the ordinary work will be done by robots and computers, while human beings are free to be human. As the world becomes more and more roboticized, there may well be human beings who are too old to learn new ways. They will have to be taken care of. Jobs will have to be found for them. And little by little, the world will shift to a new kind of society. Is this sure to happen? Of course not. We have to make it happen. We must keep from destructive actions like war, and we must keep from destroying the environment by pollution. We've got to work hard in making a new world. Well, let's go to, now, Think and Grin. And that's on pages 55 and 56. First one, Ryan, what do you get when you cross a dog with a penny? Frank, I don't know. Ryan, a copper spaniel. And that's from Ryan Henson in Lake Mills, Wisconsin. Dylan, what's God's favorite cheese? Robert, beats me. Dylan, Swiss, because it's holy. Okay. And that's from Dylan Jacasurka from Los Gatos, California. And then Andrew. Andrew, my poor dog doesn't have a nose. Joe, how does she smell? Andrew, terrible. That's from Andrew Lamb in Rancho Cordova, California. And here's Pedro's pick. Matt, what do you call it when a 12th grader forgets something? Howard, what? Matt, a senior moment. And that's from Matthew Howard in Albany, Georgia. Andrew, what animal keeps the best time? Ryan, I haven't a clue. Andrew, a watchdog. And that's from Andrew Patterson in Greenville, Texas. Jim, what's a car's favorite meal? Adam, I don't know. Jim, breakfast. That's from Adam Curry in Danuba, California. Patrick, what do you call a Scottish dish that fades from the public eye? Pedro, I haven't the foggiest. Patrick, a haggis bend. And that's from Patrick Hesser in Hersher, Illinois. Daffynition, sugarcane, an edible walking stick. And that's from Zach Reese in Middletown, Wisconsin. Kelvin, why did the apple cross the road? Martin, why? Kelvin, to get to Granny Smith's house. And that's from Kelvin Dang in Burke, Virginia. Daffynition, discount, the number of times you have been insulted. And that's from Hank Hansen in Babylon, New York. Aaron, what did the mother bullet say to the daddy bullet? Fran, what? Aaron, we're gonna have a BB. And that's from Aaron Keld in Tallahassee, Florida. All right, a guy is sitting at home when he hears a knock at the door. He opens the door and sees a snail on the porch. He picks up the snail and throws it as far as he can. A year later, there's another knock at the door. He opens it and sees the same snail. The snail says, what was that all about? And that's from Arnold Chang in Honolulu, Hawaii. Walt Wiseman says, he who does a good turn daily must get dizzy after a while. From Chris Karcher in Grove City, Pennsylvania. Bob, when do windows see the doctor? Joe, I don't know. Bob, when they have pains. And that's from Senhuran Kalidos in Lyle, Illinois. A guy takes a lawyer asks a lawyer about his fees. I charge $50 for 3 questions, the lawyer says. That's awfully steep, isn't it? The guy asks. Yes, I suppose so, the lawyer replies. Now, what's your final question? From Arnold Chang in Honolulu, Hawaii. Don, what do you get when you cross a guitar in a store? John, beats me. Don, a rock shop. That's from Cole Allen in Reno, Nevada. A grandmother sat on her porch knitting 3 socks when someone walked by and asked, why are you knitting 3 socks? The grandmother replied, because my grandson said he's grown a foot since joining the Army. And that's from Noah Boyd in Willow Spring, North Carolina. Wart Wiseman wonders, why does Hawaii have interstate highways? Trevor Shipley from Gilbertsville, Pennsylvania. Webster, what's a boxer's favorite drink? Sean, I don't know. Webster, punch. And definition? Information, how geese fly. And that's from Hayden in Leatherland, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Well, that's about all we have time for tonight. We've run out of time for today's episode of Boys Life. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. So long, till next time.